Hey, this is Steve Bloom, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
You are now on the inside of what I like to call the Circle of Trust. We are all connected in the great circle of life.
You know something, Bert?
What?
I think you and I are going in circles.
It feels like we're going in circles.
The circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Because it's a circle.
Yeah, we heard about the circle.
Yes, we're familiar with shapes.
Hi, this is Chuck.
This is Greg.
And this is Dan, and we are Talking in Circles, brought by the Geekcast Radio Network, a podcast that is back from its winter break, ready to talk a little Star Wars, as today we will be dedicating our second half to our full review of the latest Star Wars film, A Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. But before we get to that, how have things been going? How was your Christmas for you guys?
Good, good. Had a really good Christmas, spending with family and friends and everything. Had good New Year's and everything, so kind of looking forward to 2017 being much better than 2016, the disaster that it was.
Yeah. Greg, how things going with you?
All right, boring. My family's not very big, and so I haven't had a lot really going on over the holidays. It was mostly me playing Fallout constantly, Fallout 4. Downloaded a bunch of DLCs that I'm behind on and kicking some super mutant ass. So
you're Fallout Boy right now?
Kind of, yes. I'm Vault Boy.
Does Fallout, is that only on PlayStation? I'm showing my video game.
No, I believe it's across all things. It's on Xbox, PlayStation, and PC. A lot of people that I see play it on PC.
Okay. See, I say that because I've grown up in the world of video games, because for this Christmas, my wife got me an Xbox One, which was very unexpected. I got her a waffle maker, and she got me an Xbox. So, kind of even, a little bit. No, not so much. So that
I think
that
was you're getting more returns with that waffle maker.
Yeah,
you get delicious waffles.
Yeah, we can eat waffles while playing Xbox. So
that's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. I got a few games. I have a lot to catch up with because, I haven't played video games much lately, and I have my 360, which was at kind of on its last legs. I had to pry it open with a knife to get the tray open and all that great stuff. So I'm still catching up. I got a few games from Electronics Boutique, which is a store that doesn't exist anymore, from GameStop, and
actually,
those have been fun.
I believe Electronics Boutique does still exist. It just exists up in Canada, I believe.
Oh, there you go.
It's like GameStop and Electronic Boutiques are the same company, but it's GameStop down here, Electronic Boutiques up in Canada, I believe.
I guess America, we don't know what boutique means, so we're just confused. We're like, I don't.
We had some people walking in there thinking it was a totally different type of store. Yeah, they weren't sure.
Yeah,
they were thinking something else, and they just saw video games. So.
Yeah, but how about you guys? You guys, anything fun and exciting for Christmas?
I got some movies. I always hold off on my movies because they make good Christmas presents for me. Because usually I don't really want anything else. So I kind of save them up because my family's always like, what do you want? And so I tell them movies. But so I got Civil War Blu-ray and X-Men Apocalypse and stuff. I got the latest Rocky movie, Creed. I got that one. So
nice.
Pretty excited. Got some good movies to watch.
Nice.
Amazon cards. Oh, I did order something exciting with my Amazon cards. I ordered two omnibus collections that I found for pretty good prices. One is the Age of Apocalypse collection from the 90s.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
And one is the Onslaught collection, also from the 90s. But nice. I found them for really good prices, and they're really good complete collections and everything. Like, they got good reviews and everything, so thought it'd be cool to have.
Yeah, that's that Age of Apocalypse on Omnibus must be like gigantic. I could, like, you know, a good like 15 pounds a book.
Yeah, well, they actually split it up into two Omnibus books.
Okay.
Because the one is like the main story, and I guess they like retooled it. Because, you know, there's like paperback versions and everything like that. They have it in trades, but they retooled it for the Omnibus so that you could just buy the main AOA Omnibus and get the full effect of the story. But then there's also a companion version. Like, if you really want to get into the smaller tie-ins and stuff, you could get the companion version. But I guess they set it up so that you really only need the one if you had to, which is kind of cool.
Greg, you get anything fun and exciting?
Not really. I asked for money for the most part. I really didn't see a need or a want for anything. So I mostly got like clothes, art supplies. Another thing that I got that was cool, and not from family or friends or anything like that, and which a big shout out to Funko. I have their Marvel Collector Corps and part of that, and I'm also part of their DC Legion of Collectors boxes and everything. And what was really cool for Christmas, they sent out, I guess, to everyone that has like one of their three series of boxes, they sent them out another one from a different series. So I got a box from the Star Wars series for free from Funko, which is totally cool. I never expected something like that from any big companies or anything. Like, some small things for free, okay, yeah, but one of their boxes, I thought it was pretty cool. And inside was a t-shirt that I'm currently wearing. It's of the character that gets his arm cut off by Ben Kenobi in the cantina scene.
We'll be talking about him later too, probably.
And I got
he doesn't like you.
Yeah, I got a Ben Kenobi pop. I got a red Snaggletooth pop. I got a little Chewbacca pop pen and a pen or a pin and a patch, which usually come in all of Funko's boxes. So I thought that was pretty neat. And so I just want to throw a big shout out to Funko, who I thought that was really cool of them to do something like that.
So how many Funkos do you have at this point? Any idea?
Oh, a ridiculous amount.
Has it made triple digits yet, do you think?
I'm close, but it has not made triple digits.
Nice.
They should throw you a little bone because you kind of like cleaned them out at New York Comic Con.
I really didn't clean them out. Well, you cleaned them out for me, Chuck, but I really didn't clean them out because they were out of a lot of the other stuff that I wanted to. So
true.
Nice. Cool. I know, so we'll talk a little bit about some of the stuff we watched and read over break. I know, Greg, you caught up with a TV series that I've been meaning to catch up with, but have not yet, mainly because I don't have Stars, but how it was Ash vs. the Evil Dead, or Ash and the Evil Dead.
It's Ash vs. the Evil Dead. I picked this one up at Best Buy just randomly the one day, and I thought it was pretty cheap for a Blu-ray season of a show. It was like $25 or something, $25.
For
so I thought,
how many episodes?
10.
That's not bad. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I picked that up because I've really enjoyed the three movies. I'm not sure about the last reboot that they did with it. I never really saw that one. But I enjoyed the originals. And so this kind of not picks up where they left off, but it's like 20 or 30 years in the future. It kind of goes congruent with our actual time has kind of passed. So it's got Bruce Campbell in it and his aged glory, and he's a bit bigger guy at this point, and they make fun of that, which I feel bad for him. Bruce Campbell always seems like the nicest guy, but they kind of bust him about that in the show, and it fits in perfectly with the original movies. It's campy, horror, gory. It's got this weird sense of humor to it. If you love the original movies, you will love this show. I think they did a great job with it. Instead of Ash just being on his lonesome this time around, he's got two sidekicks going with him, and they're a lot of fun, interesting characters going on. It's just crazy, gory. It's seriously. I know I kind of repeated it twice here, but it is pretty much like the originals. I think there was only one fault I had with it, and it's the CGI blood that they throw in there every once in a while kind of throws me off. But otherwise, it's really great.
How are the special effects in general, considering it's a TV? I mean, not that Evil Dead was ever a great special effects show, I mean, movie or anything like that.
Yeah, and if they do practical effects, and the practical effects kind of fall in with the originals, but that's what kind of makes me like it. And so these little CGI ones kind of are like these glaring things that kind of poke out at you, and you kind of really notice them since there's a lot of actual physical effects going on. So the CGI ones kind of really pop out at you, and since there wasn't really CGI in the originals, it makes it pop out even more.
Jeez. Cool. I need to watch that, so now I have more reason to. So
yeah, it was very good, Dan. Very good.
Yeah, very cool. I think they just started season two recently, if I'm not mistaken. So
I think they finished with it, actually, and yeah, That's out. I think they're starting on season three, to be quite honest.
I am just behind on everything. Is that what we're learning? Yeah. There's just too much stuff.
There is. I'm behind on Game of Thrones. I'm behind on Walking Dead. Like, it's bad, and that's seriously why there's so much stuff going on.
Yeah, I've given up on the CW shows. So,
when was the original movie, Greg? Was it mid-80s?
No,
the first was late 70s. I'm pretty sure.
No, it was like late 80s, and like the last one was like early 90s. I want to say it was like 85 through like early 90s. I want to say, I'll look it up 81. On my phone.
The first Evil Dead was 1981, which was honestly like a glorified student film, and like going back and watching it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Evil Dead 2, like it's
the same movie. It's practically,
yeah. There's a lot of debate if it's really a sequel or just really a remake of the original. But yeah, the first one's 81.
I've not seen any of those.
Yeah. If you would like to borrow them, I have the DVDs at my house. I have all three, I believe.
Yeah.
Just tell me who wins.
Yeah, like the first movie was probably made for less than this podcast cost, which is telling you something. It was very, cheap. Chuck, I know you also watched a movie over break. What did you catch up with?
I did. I watched a few movies, but I chose this one to talk about because it's kind of a genre that we share interest in, and something that I like to go back to every now and then. And that's kind of like the cheesy martial arts movies, like the B-rated martial art movies. And this was a new take on an older classic, and that is, of course, Kickboxer Vengeance, which is sort of a sequel in effect to the original Kickboxer with Jean-Claude Van Damme. But this one, obviously, bigger and better because it has Dave Bautista in it. So, not really, though. But I liked it a lot. I think it was cool because, you know, Van Damme wasn't trying to be the fighter in it. Like, you know, we've seen in some of the other fading action stars where they kind of overstay their welcome in the fighting circuit. Good and Rocky, but I think it was good that he chose to be more of the trainer this time around, and kind of let some of the younger talent coming up in the industry kind of take the forefront of it. But saying that, though, I think Van Damme was a really great part of this movie. Actually, like he didn't have like a huge part. He was like, I would definitely say like a co-star, but he was pretty great in it. Actually, he did just enough. He wasn't like overly annoying or obnoxious with corny stuff like he was back in his movies in the '80s and stuff like that. There were a couple little callbacks here and there, but I think they were fun. They were kind of done in a cool way. Like, for example, the one scene they were in this prison, and they're able to like trick the guard and they get out of the prison. And as they're walking out, there's this guy in the one cell and he's like, "Hey, do you remember me?" And I'm pretty sure it was the original guy that played Tong Po in the first movie.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and Van Damme just kind of like shook his head and they just kept walking. So it was kind of funny. And then at the end, as they're scrolling the credits at the end of the movie, I don't know how many people remember Kickboxer vividly, but there was that really corny dance scene with Van Damme in that like rundown little bar where he's like doing the really corny like dance moves and everything. But they kind of did like a split screen where they showed that, and then they had the new guy doing like the same dance moves like from like on the new set. So they had like a little split screen going on. That was kind of fun. I thought that was pretty cool. So they were like, they were making fun of themselves, but it wasn't a good way. They weren't trying to like, you know, take themselves too seriously and stuff. So I think Batista was good because I think he only had like 3 or 4 lines in the movie. he pretty much did what he needed to do. Like, he surprisingly looked a lot like the original Tong Po. I guess once you have that distinptive haircut and ponytail, that's kind of like
it's like the only way to make a man bun look badass. So.
Right, exactly. and then of course they did the iconic thing with the glass where they dipped their knuckles in the glass and everything. So they had that, but it was cool. It's a fun watch if you like those martial arts movies, and especially if you were a fan of them back in the 80s and stuff, Van Damme in particular. It's pretty cool. Like, the stunts are, for a while, like, it was pretty straightforward, like, martial art. And then, like, a little crazy with doing some weird stunts where he's, like, jumping on people's heads and then flipping over. And they got a little bit fancy at the end, maybe too fancy for their own good, but they didn't get too carried away with it, like I thought. So, but it's definitely a fun watch. I'd recommend it. It's like an hour and a half long. So, you know, if you like those and you got some time to kill, I would check it out.
Very cool. It's on Netflix too, if I'm not mistaken. So,
yes, like, yes,
like,
it is.
It is. It's a good, it sounds like a good Netflix movie, right? You just kind of throw it on and be able to, yeah, like, you know,
do other action stuff and kind of have it and on in the background.
Yeah.
One other thing I'll note quick too is there's a bunch of like UFC fighters and MMA fighters in it and stuff. Some pretty famous ones too. George St. Pierre is in it.
Yeah, he was on Captain America, wasn't he?
Yes, yeah, he was Batroc the Leaper.
Yeah.
Or Batroc the Leaper.
So what we're saying is Kickboxer exists in the Marvel Universe. Is that what,
exactly?
Yeah.
Yes. Also, Gina Carano is in it.
Really?
Also, How You Know It's Good. And there's another guy, too. I don't know his name. But he's like, I know he's supposed to be like kind of popular.
Frank Mir or Mir or whatever?
I'm not sure. He has like a small part in like one particular scene.
Okay.
But
was he the guy that was in the AC Delco commercials?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with those.
Does he have like a mohawk type thing?
Chuck Liddell?
Yeah.
No. It wasn't him. Uh-oh. It was like a new, like a little bit younger guy, like newer kind of.
Oh, okay. I think I've expelled my. Only other person I know is Ronda Rousey, who probably wasn't in it because she would have gotten beaten up too quickly, because apparently that's her new thing.
I know. Yeah, really. I know, you know, George St. Pierre is like a huge name in UFC, so that was kind of cool to see him in there.
When we did watch UFC with our other friend Dan, that was like the only fighter that I was really took an interest in.
Yeah, he was pretty cool, because he was actually like, for a while there, he was one of the best.
Yeah.
I don't know if he ever...
I think he went out on top or something.
Yeah, I think he was champion at some point. I could be wrong, but... I'm trying to look up the guy's name and I'm not finding it right now, but it's one part of the movie that was kind of corny though, was like they had to have the police in, I think they were in Taiwan. They find where they're fighting the first time. And then like later in the movie, they're fighting in the exact same spot and it takes them a while to find them. I'm like, really? You've been there before.
Hiding in plain sight.
That part was kind of weird, but other than that, Oh, here's the dude, Cain Velasquez.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
He's kinda...
a big guy with a red mask and.
I was thinking the same thing. He's brothers with the Undertaker. that's weird. Yeah, different type of fighting, I guess. Very cool.
Fake fighting.
Yeah, I guess I could. I'll talk about actually, oddly enough, one quick podcast that I've actually been listening to. I had to drive a lot coming up to Scranton for the holidays, so I try to find something to kind of listen to on the drive. And I've been trying to get into like history, like based podcasts. And the one I started listening to is actually called "The First Stories of Invention." It's basically about like the first things that ever existed. The first, like, I listened to the first two episodes, and the first episode's about the first ever Ferris wheel, and like goes into its creation, why it was created. It ends up being like an audio documentary too, because they get some like voice actors to do some reenactments and stuff like that, and they're about like 45 minute episodes or so. It's actually quite interesting if you're a fan of just like oddball history type of stuff. So I would recommend it. It's like I said, it's called the first Stories of Invention. It's just and they've done other episodes. I think the most recent one was on the Pledge of Allegiance and the first Thanksgiving and things like that. So it's very cool. But anything else before we take a quick break? All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and talk about that little indie film that could Rogue One, A Star Wars Story right after this.
Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top three list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InSessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
Right, and welcome back. Yesterday, we are talking about Star Wars. Sorry, it's not called that. It's called Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Star Wars is in there someplace. But, you know, since...
Get it right, Dan.
I know. Since it's been out for almost nearly a month by the time this has been will be released, and it's made about $1 trillion worldwide, we're just going to put the spoiler warning right in the beginning. So if you've not watched the movie, I would say come back later, just because... Yeah, it was, like we mentioned in pre-record, pretty much A New Hope spoiled the majority of this already. But so we're going to get right into it. But just to start off, overall kind of general thoughts and, you know, opinions about the movie and how much you enjoyed it or did not enjoy it. Greg, what did you think of Rogue One?
I actually really enjoyed it. It was a little slow up front for me. It was a lot of backstory and setting up. And I wasn't really caring for any of the characters at the beginning. But then as we progressed, it just kind of picked up for me. And I started to find characters I like, or characters started to develop to the point where I was starting to enjoy them. But I thought it was overall really good. CGI was... a lot better than we've seen with some other movies that have tried similar things. But overall, the CGI was really well done. Music was really cool. The characters were interesting looking from a design perspective. I really liked the story personally. I thought it was pretty cool. And so, yeah.
Nice. Chuck, what about you?
Well, first thing when I was watching, I was like, OMG, another Death Star movie? Are you serious? No. No, I kind of had like a really strong feeling that I was going to like this going in, just because there were some issues that I had with Force Awakens for, you know, one reason or another, I didn't like it a whole lot. And so I thought this one, you know, being original trilogy, I'm going to like it probably a lot more. And, that did turn out to be the case. I really, really enjoyed this. I found it like really fun again, like in a in the geekiest way, because like I think I really, like Greg mentioned, it was slow in the beginning for him, but I was sort of like getting into those details and stuff like that. And like when I watch Star Wars movies, like a lot of it's about the details for me, because there's so many things, like there's so many subplots going on, and there's so many characters, and there's so many different things. So that's kind of like the mood that I get into when I watch Star Wars. I like, you know, looking for the detail stuff and finding all that stuff. So I did enjoy that. Obviously it did get better as it went on, I thought, and you know, I did thoroughly enjoy the little bit darker theme. I think only because, you know, for a lot of reasons, Force Awakens felt like more of a kid's movie for me. Like there were a lot of aspects of it that, you know, and for good reason, but they wanted to sort of cater to the younger generation to, and, you know, get them involved in Star Wars, just like our generation did and our parents and stuff like that. So I was glad that this one felt a little bit darker and a little bit more mature, like some more mature themes and stuff like that. And doesn't have a happy ending. Everybody doesn't make it out alive and everything like that. And that was pretty cool. I had somebody tell, you know, they thought, you know, Jyn Erso and Cassian could have like escaped on a pod or something and onto a different world, never to be seen again. But, you know, I think it was kind of a little bit more striking the way they did it here, because it just gives you an idea of what everyone sacrificed, and they went into this knowing that they probably weren't going to make it out. So I liked that more adult theme. I liked a lot of the callbacks to, they weren't really callbacks as they were trying to fit into the old trilogy, but there were some references to older characters and stuff like that I really enjoyed. And there was a couple of new characters that I really liked too. So I was extremely pleased with it coming out of there. Very few gripes with it.
Interesting. I think I overall did like Rogue One. I think I probably had more issues than you guys did. Mostly with kind of the second act was where I felt it got a little murky. And while I enjoyed a lot of the like side characters, especially that we can get like Donnie Yen and the new android, and I thought they kind of stole the show. Like the main characters, Felicity Jones, who I am a pretty big fan of. I've liked pretty much everything she's in.
So am I, Dan.
Yes. I felt like, I don't know, her character felt incomplete to me. Incomplete, I guess you'd say. Incomplete's not a word. Incomplete to me, and similar with that of Diego Luna's character, Cassian. We can get into this a little bit more, but I felt their arcs were inconsistent, I would say. Like, it felt like there were just pieces missing. I like them overall as characters, but sometimes their motivations, the reasoning, and their development seemed kind of spotty, which I didn't feel like with, like, Force Awakens, which is something I really ended up enjoying about that, were the characters' motivations are pretty clear, maybe simplistic, but I think that's kind of allowed that movie more space to kind of grow in other ways. I thought the action overall was pretty solid, a good mixture. It had some of the most, probably, like we've talked about, darkest, gritty action for a Star Wars movie. It did, as cheesy as it may sound, put the war in Star Wars. I love a lot of the like new character designs. The Death Troopers look pretty great. Some of the new planets are awesome. You know, you can just see the amount of merchandise that's being made in this with all the new toys they're creating, which was cool to see. And like I said, so a lot of had the adventure, and overall, I think the chemistry between the group really started to come into a fold in the end. Like I thought, like, okay, this group really has that Star Wars chemistry you want to see. Even like this group, probably even more so than anyone in the prequels, even though they had a limited time together. It was a really great back and forth that you would expect for a Star Wars film. And some of the new worlds were very interesting. And I was overall satisfied with it. I think it's a good addition and something very different for the world of Star Wars. I did have some problems with it, as I mentioned. And I guess maybe we can get into that to start with. With this, you know, our main character throughout here is, you know, Felicity Jones, Jyn Erso. And for me, I had a hard time figuring out, like, where she was in all this. at times it felt like someone who was, she seemed like someone who was detached from being like a rebel or what have you, someone that was more like, I'm just going to do what I need to do. But she had her background of working with Flores Whitaker's character, where she's clearly fought the Imperials before, you know, so it was hard for me to kind of get like, you know, is she, you know, is she Han Solo? Is she Luke Skywalker? Is she a little bit of both? And that was kind of where, you know, I struggled with. I don't know what you guys thought.
I kind of related it back to Luke in A New Hope a little bit, because in a way it's like, you know, she wanted to do something about it, but just like Luke, he wanted to get away and join the academy and everything, but he was kind of like, there's nothing I can really do about it now. I'm stuck here working for Uncle Owen and doing all this crap, and not that she was in the same situation, but I felt like she felt the same way. Like she might want to do something, but she couldn't do anything about it right now where she was. I don't know. It's a little bit of a loose connection, but it didn't really bother me too much.
I know, Greg, you said to start off with, you weren't like a big fan of her character, but that kind of turned around. So what were like your initial apprehensions and what caused you to kind of come around to her as a character?
She just seemed kind of cold, and it seemed like she was just kind of overall bitchy. So that really just didn't do anything for me, emotions wise. She was just cold and bitchy to me, but she kind of warmed up and she started to get friends and she started to kind of loosen up with things, I think, a little bit. It wasn't how Felicity Jones played the character. I don't think it was how the character was written.
Yeah, like I think I could kind of see that, because like, you definitely see her, the start off with, it seems like she might, like, you know, shoot Cassian in the face just to get away and like never come back. But always there's that connection with her and her father. That was kind of like the linchpin, I think, that kind of allowed me to kind of get over the majority of that issue. But there was a lot of talk about with this movie, a lot of reshoots that happened, and a lot of people pointed at like a big part of that might have been softening her character, because I think maybe at first impressions were a lot like what you were saying, Greg, where she seemed a little bit too unlikable. And there do seem like there are some moments where you get a little bit more tenderness to her character, a little bit more reason to kind of see who she is beyond that tough shell. Might be like kind of what they were going for. Any other character? I know we talked about her, but any other, I know, you know, being a Star Wars movie, there's a lot of characters. Any other characters that you guys felt that like you did enjoy, or any ones that kind of stood out to you?
I loved blind Asian dude, and I think he was a little bit more on the Hawaiian Asian specific side. I forget character names. I'm so sorry. I'm bad with like alien sounding names.
It's Baze and Chirrut, I believe is. I know.
Dwight Schrute.
Dwight Schrute. Yes. Donnie Yen was the blind, you know, Jedi sensitive guy, and then Wen Jiang, who I believe is Japanese.
Okay, he's Japanese.
I could be wrong.
He's got a bit of a Hawaiian look to him, so I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, I like those two guys. I think they gave a little bit more heart and a little bit more lightheartedness to the entire movie. I thought those two characters were a lot of fun, and I liked the droid K2.
K2SO, is that?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, K2SO.
I really liked his character too as well. I thought he was kind of snarky, which was a lot of fun for me. I like a little bit of snark, so
especially from
a droid. So it added a little humor to it, I thought.
Yeah,
I'll definitely agree with you guys on Jin. She was definitely not as likable as somebody like Luke when we first saw him in A New Hope. Like, he was just instantly likable, and she really was not in the beginnings. But I think someone else in this that was unlikable, but in a good way, wasn't meant to be, was Director Krennic. And for whatever reason, I really liked that character, and I thought that guy played a really, really good role in that. I didn't feel like it was. I mean, some people could argue that he was just kind of thrown in there or something, but I felt like he just kind of stuck out to me. Like, he was kind of like a good little villain. Like, he had a good presence and everything. So I enjoyed seeing Krennic's character on there.
He seemed like an imperial politician. Like, he just seemed really slimy.
Yeah. And, like he was a weasel, but
I was reading in, I think, an interview he did, like, realizing, like, you know, Darth Vader's in this movie, so you really can't try to be the badass character because you're going toe-to-toe with the biggest badass, so it's never going to work. So I think he played it, because it's done by Ben Mendelsohn, who's one of my, like, favorite actors today. He plays a lot of these similar roles. He's always, nearly always, some sort of scummy guy or some sort of, like, really, weaselly guy. And I think it kind of works here. And I love, like, all the infighting that's happening with the Imperials and, like, how a lot of it's, like, with him and Turkin and all this back and forth over, like, who's really getting credit for what. It's a lot of, like, really unimportant things that they're arguing, but it kind of makes sense because it's, you got these guys who kind of just want to, you know, they're just really looking out for themselves. So it makes sense that they're just sniveling and conniving.
Exactly. It was like, and the one scene that I liked in particular that really like displays that is like when the rebels land on the beach on Scarif and he's like barking orders at his guys. And it's like, you just got like totally reamed out by Vader and like he choked you and like Tarkin is like above him and everything. And like they're totally like kind of chewing his butt out, and then he's going barking orders at these other guys like he's so much better than them. And I'm like, you know, you're such a slime ball, you know what I mean? Like you're no better than these guys that you're telling what to do, you know what I mean?
Yeah clearly he's his uncle is someone important. That's where he got the job. So
exactly. And I don't know how he got the white costume, because he should have just had like a crappy green one.
True. And he got the cool-looking stormtroopers that kind of accompanying him, which is I mean, you got to be an important character to get your own special, specially designed stormtroopers.
Exactly.
I'll kind of second Greg with your love of Donnie Yen and Wen Zheng's character. They to me made the movie. Like they were anytime they were on screen, yes. I was happy. Donnie Yen brought a lot of fun and heart and humor. You know, I love the moment where like he gets a bag over his head and he's like, "I'm blind, you idiot!" And that was a good moment. And I'm a fan of him because I love the Ant-Man movies, and he's kind of talking about Kickboxer earlier. Like he does a lot of those cheesy martial arts films, and man, martial arts in the Star Wars universe, that was pretty cool to see. So I would love to see them getting their own movie. I'd go see it.
That's something I never really thought about, but I guess, you know, we kind of had that a little bit with Darth Maul with some of his stuff, but, you know, we don't really speak of that movie too much. So I will say, though, the one scene with when he had his, like, his bow staff and, like, you know, there's, like, the thing on the end. I could swear that there was going to be a lightsaber that came out of that, you know, because I'm thinking this guy obviously is, like, aware of the Force, and he's like kind of a little bit adept in the Force. And I'm like, you know, he was talking about the Kyber crystals and everything on Jeddah. I'm like, he's got to have a lightsaber inside of that bow staff. It's, you know, just going to pop out, but it never did. So,
no, it ended up being a gun. He used it to shoot down a TIE fighter. I'm like, that's, you know.
And that was cool. That not only did he time it so perfectly to hit the TIE fighter, but when the TIE fighter crashed, it took out a turret. So, that was extremely impressive.
Yeah. So I did enjoy, like, and K2SO was great. Like, he, you know, Alan Tudyk was, he's probably in, like, the geek echelon of actors people love because he was in Firefly and stuff like that. So I'm surprised there wasn't some sort of Firefly reference. Maybe I missed it. I'm not too.
I watched Firefly, but I the hell if I remember any stuff from it. It's been a while since I watched it.
Yeah, and so I did like how they kind of interacted as a team, and in like K2SO, I thought in the back and forth with him and the other characters was a lot of fun, and you know, he was a different type of droid. Like I was like, when I saw he was going to be in the movie, I'm like, oh, it's going to be how are they going to put another droid in a movie? Is it going to be like, you know, we already have BB-8 and R2-D2 and C-3PO, but they found a way to, you know, characterize a robot, which is pretty cool. So
yeah, I like Alan Tudyk and everything he pretty much does.
Yeah.
The part where she shoots the droid that looks exactly like him, that I thought that was hilarious. Because at first I thought it was him, and then like he's like, did you know that wasn't me? That was hilarious.
Nice, yeah. I speaking of that sequence in that town, I thought that was great. Like, that was a very different type of action sequence for a Star Wars movie. Like, it was like this like guerrilla style action war moment that was like, wow, this is great. I was kind of wishing we got a little bit more of that type of action, but you know, it's still Star Wars, so I guess you still need to give us the space battles.
Yeah, and you could see like, you could see some of the tactics too, where they were trying to toss the grenades at the little tank things, you know, just kind of like we do when we're playing Battlefront. You know, it was kind of the same type of strategies. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know,
did you know Warwick Davis had a cameo on that spot? He was like the one little dude.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah, he was.
Did not know that either.
Yeah, I just found that out as I was doing research. So that was pretty cool. Speaking at the movie as a whole, so obviously the premise of the film is, you know, they're trying to get the Star Wars, or the Death Star plans, but there's obviously a lot more to it than just that, because it's not just simply go here, get the plans, and that's it, which is what I kind of thought it was going to be, but it was, you know, a lot more pieces. You had the father, you know, the father dynamic, you father-daughter dynamic, you had to get to this guy, pilot, so there were a lot of moving things going on. Did you guys have it, like, how did you feel like overall the story, this being a Star Wars story, how well was it told? Did it ever seem confusing? Was it pretty, you know, did it seem fluid enough for you?
I was extremely happy with it. I thought the part that really kind of dominated my thoughts was just the fact that Galen Erso was building this flaw into the system, because, you know, for a lot of years, people that have seen the Star Wars movies but were critics of it, you know, they've always said, like, one of the things I've always said is, like, well, how could they so easily blow up this huge Death Star station? Like, that's stupid, you know what I mean? And this, like, just provides, like, a really perfect answer for it and fills in the gap perfectly, just showing that he built in this flaw and hid it in the plans and everything. So that sort of just overwhelmed me in a positive way, and I was like, that just fits perfectly, you know, the way they did it and everything. So I was extremely happy with that. And you know, the whole backstory with, is he a traitor, is he like loyal to the Empire, it was sort of interesting. It wasn't like the most entertaining thing in the world, but I did get a kick out of that. And you know, it kind of like, it goes as a mirror, because you know, Jyn Erso's trying to find out her way too, because she's really not sure what to think of her father. She's not even seen him in so long. So it was kind of, as you're finding out about him, you start to find out who she is. So it was kind of like a cool little parallel thing going along, but I enjoyed it.
What about you, Greg?
Yeah, I thought they did a good job explaining at the front of kind of what's going on and everything, and so it was very easy to follow the lines that they were casting out for everybody watching. So I had no problem keeping up with it. I guess listening to Chuck now, I kind of agree that might have been a little bit boring with the storyline of her father, and not, because it seemed like from the very beginning that he was kind of like against the Empire and everything, and so I really didn't have any like questioning doubts in my mind about his motivations and everything. So I could have done without that, I guess, but overall I thought it was a really great job.
Yeah, I guess I got the overall, I think the general reasoning behind everything worked for me. Some of the pieces, I guess, and I feel like maybe a second watch would make it a little bit more clear, like why we're going to specific spots over, like when they were going to release her, you know, they were going to find that pilot. The pilot was giving them a specific message, and this message then they were to transfer to get further information, and they would get that further information and then get more information from the Death Star. Like if you were like to kind of jot it out, like the piece by piece, it seems like a lot of different like a lot of different factors to kind of get where they end up going. But during it, I was comprehensive enough. I do feel like there was a lot of, especially the first 15 minutes, I felt like we went to like 10 different planets. And I was like, okay, we're at this planet, and now we're at this planet, and then we're here. And
yeah,
it was a lot going on. And maybe, like I said, because I going into this thought it was going to be more, you know, okay, they get her, you know, her father does the Death Star plans. Okay, they get her, and then they're going to go then try to find him to get, like, either the plans or the what have you. I thought it was going to be basically, you know, kind of a three-step process, but there was a little bit more to that. And it was kind of cool, too. What I like about, like you talked about, Chuck, was, like, the details and kind of seeing a lot of, like, the world of Star Wars and how big it is and how, you know, we think of the Rebels and you think of this one unit, but here we see there are multiple factions that are going against the Imperials. You had Whitaker's team that's, like, you know, kind of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Like, you know, the Rebels aren't necessarily cozy with them, but they both hate the Empire. So, like, seeing how, like, there's a lot of different people, there's a lot of chaos going on. It kind of expanded the world of Star Wars in that way, where, you know, the Rebel Alliance was just one piece of it. And seeing how that... I was surprised we didn't get anything in the Senate, because, see, like, you thought maybe we would get a scene or two, knowing that, like, Mon Mothma and Jimmy Smith's character.
No Senate. Boring.
I'm glad we didn't, so, but I thought maybe we would, because, you know, they have this political game they're doing where underneath they're trying to be rebels, but they're also trying to work the political landscape of it too. And even the Imperials are doing that, because after they blow up that city, they have to say it's a mining accident, and then there's a lot of
that's a good point. I thought they would have mentioned something about that too, because really, I mean, they didn't dissolve the Senate until A New Hope, because you hear the one Imperial officer say it, and, like, they also talk about arresting Leia might lend sympathy to the rebels' cause and stuff like that. So I thought they would mention something about the Senate in passing, but you're right, though, they did a great job of making it seem more like a large alliance, like a large rebellion, more so than we saw in some of the other ones, I think.
Yeah, I did like that portion of it. Was there anything else you guys wanted to bring up? Anything that I didn't mention?
I had some other things, some things I really liked and some things I didn't. I really liked the dogfighting scenes, like with the Red Squadron, Blue Squadron, Gold Squadron, stuff like that. Some of them were archived footage from A New Hope that they just reused.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
I didn't know that at first either, but someone mentioned it to me, and then I ended up looking it up, and it is correct. When they had... And they show the Red Leader and the Gold Leader, that's actually archived footage from the first movie, which is, I was wondering, I'm like, how did they get it to look so much like that? But I'm like, I'm an idiot. But it's so seamless, like it really blends well. So I thought that was cool. Also, like the, you know, Vader ripping through the Rebel troops on the one ship, that was amazing.
Oh, that was, yeah, that goes on as like one of the scenes of the year for me. Like that was, that makes you want a Darth Vader movie. It's just like,
yeah, that, I feel like that was the climax, because you had a great story about, was it your nephew or your niece or something kept asking when Vader was gonna appear, and like that was like right at that moment.
Yeah, so yeah, I went to see this with my brother and my nephew, and he's a huge Darth Vader fan, which is kind of weird. He's, you know, he's 5 years old.
Also, and likes Nazis. And
well, my brother made a good point, because he watched them with, I should have warned him, but he watched them in the wrong order. They watched them episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So they grew up with Anakin being the hero of this story. So, you know, for them, like, you know, it's Darth, in a lot of ways it is Darth Vader's story, but like for him, Darth Vader is a hero first and foremost, because the majority of the films that they've seen, the first three, except for the end of the third one, obviously, and then, you know, the end of the, with the Return of the Jedi, turns good. So, like, for them, he's the hero of the story, so that's why he's a big Darth Vader fan. So he was like, when's Darth Vader coming? And that was the moment, and right after that is when we get the first Darth Vader scene with him in his lava castle, which is pretty cool. Did you know the background behind that, too? That Darth Vader castle?
All I had heard was that I know at some point he had one on Mustafar because of that's where the accident happened, and he felt like a connection there or whatever. But well, other than that, I didn't really know anything.
So that was based upon a design that was originally meant for Return of the Jedi. So Return of the Jedi, the finale wasn't at first going to be on the Death Star. It was going to be at a castle with lava, like in the lava planet where Darth Vader lived. So they kind of took that original sketch and concept artwork and they made it into this movie. So that was actually kind of a callback to kind of Lucas's original plans with Return of the Jedi.
Nice.
So you talked about like the dogfighting scene. Was the one guy, were we supposed to know who he was? Like, I felt like for some reason he seemed like an important character. He was like the leader, the general of the X-Wing pilots. It seemed like it seemed like he was supposed to be important. I don't know if that was just me putting it into it or
the one guy that was kind of given what's his name, all the directions and that he should kill Felicity Jones' character. Like I said, I don't remember any of the names, but he seemed like he was supposed to be somebody important, but he just ended up being a dick the entire time.
I think it was General Draven. That was his name. Is that the one you're thinking of?
Well, him, and then I was actually speaking of the X-Wing pilot, like at the end, like he had
the pilot, okay.
The killer mustache, and he was like the one that, I think he was one of the few that ends up dying near the end. I forget. Maybe it was Red Leader, I think.
Yeah, I think it could have been.
I don't know. It just seemed like, I don't know, for some reason he seemed like he was meant to be an important character, but I guess maybe he wasn't. I mean, it just seemed different because all the other footage was archival footage except for him.
Well, the Red Leader and Gold Leader were the archive footage.
Okay.
So they were the same guys. The other cool thing was the line about Red 5, because Luke was Red 5 in A New Hope, okay. And they made a comment about Red 5 in this one, and it was like the same exact line that they said in A New Hope, and I can't remember the actual line right now, but I did read that.
How did you guys feel about, I mean, we talked about some of the callbacks like that, but what about some of the other ones? Like, you had the R2-D2 C-3PO cameo, the running into those guys from the I Don't Like You, I don't know their names, the guys from
One is, because I'm wearing a shirt, is Panda Baba. I don't remember the other one. It's Dr. Something.
Yeah, and you had
that was pretty funny.
Jimmy Smith's character who was there.
I was completely surprised by his appearance. I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah,
it
was crazy hearing him say like that he's going back to Alderaan. I'm like, no, don't.
did those bother you at all? Did you think they were fine? Like, what were your thoughts about those?
I liked it. I thought they tied them in better. I think they could have done. I think they could have even done some more, actually, to tie in. But obviously, you know, they did the CGI on a couple of characters with Tarkin and Leia. I thought the Tarkin one looked great. I thought the Leia one didn't quite look as good for whatever reason.
Unfortunately, they're going to have to do a lot more of that one.
Yeah, but there's like a shiny like sheen on her skin. Yeah. It just looked off a little bit. I don't know. Tarkin looked like it was really the guy, though. I was like, holy crap.
Yeah. I didn't have an issue with Tarkin. Like, I thought he was fine. I saw a lot of complaints, but for me, it didn't.
I thought they were both a little off.
Yeah. I didn't mind Tarkin, I guess, but the Leia one did seem like, I thought, like, it would have been better if they just, because the show, the opening, they kind of, you see her from behind, like, I figured, like, that would just kind of go that way, but when you see her full face, and I'm like, wow, that's not human colors. Those are not human colors. The Tarkin one I thought was fine. It wasn't fantastic. Like you said at the beginning, Greg, it's better than like when they did it for Tron or what else did they try to do that for? I forget.
Professor Xavier in Wolverine Origins was awful. No, they did. They definitely was much better than those films.
Yeah. And they did Robert Downey Jr. one in
Civil War.
In Civil War, yeah.
Yeah, that one wasn't bad, but I think, well, I think with that one, they had at least shots of a younger him to kind of go back to and a lot more reference for that one, maybe. I don't know. But then Leia, they had reference to. So.
It also wasn't as jarring, I guess, well, to start off with, because it was, at the end, it was in a computer programming, so if it didn't look completely human,
yeah,
it had
that, true.
So it was where, yeah. But yeah, I didn't mind the like cameos too much. The one with the guys from the bar dudes from A New Hope, I just thought that was it was fine. It was like 2 seconds, but that one seemed a little unnecessary. But the other ones, it made sense. Like they are trying to tie this all in. I loved how it feeds right into A New Hope. Like I think that's pretty awesome. Like it's legitimately like this is, you know, here you go, and you know, end and then start A New Hope and you pick right up. That was pretty. I didn't expect that. I thought it would be like, it just they sent out the plans and then there you go. But it's like, wow, that's really they're cutting it close.
Yeah, it was pretty cool that, how they did that. The one thing I wanted to mention too was, I guess if you remember in A New Hope when they were interrogating Leia trying to get the location of the Rebel base, and she told them Dantooine, remember? And they ended up saying that they found a Rebel base there, but it was an old abandoned base that hadn't been used in a while. So I thought like it would have been really, really cool. I thought it was kind of a missed opportunity. They could have somehow put that into there. I know it would have been one more planet, one more location, but I thought it would have been kind of cool to show that maybe like the reason that they left or something like that, or
that's a whole other movie though. That's what they're thinking, right?
It could be. That's quite possible for sure. But that's a story that I would like to see too, possibly, you know, cause it's like, okay, well they had a big Rebel base there. Why are they not using it anymore and stuff like that? So yeah. It's pretty cool. And then the one other thing was like, I know when Greg and I went, and I had a couple of my friends from work with us, you know, obviously when they're testing out the Death Star, they're just kind of, they're blowing up a small area on the planet. They're blowing up like one city or something like that, or one small area of the planet. And some of us are like, okay, well, what's the reasoning behind that? But I think I remember them saying during Rogue One, I think he just makes the specification of using one reactor when they fire up the test. So I think that's the difference, as opposed to like when they do a full test where they ignite all the reactors and blow up the planet. I think that was the difference, where they just did like one reactor. So it was kind of limited power, where they would just destroy one city or something like that. So.
Yeah. I think that's good. They dropped some line like that where they weren't going, they weren't dialing it up all the way. They were kind of limiting it to a specific location. And my guess for that was just, I think they were still figuring, like it was nearly complete, but I think they were kind of putting the finishing touches on it before they kind of like announced that it was existing. I guess they were waiting for it in order to like.
I loved how they showed the actual like. It was like the same shot of the two Imperial guards where they kind of had to duck out of the way when the green beam was like, it was like the same shot from A New Hope. It was kind of cool. And then I didn't realize that like about the Death Star, I guess watching, thinking back to A New Hope, it didn't dawn on me that the Death Star could enter hyperspace.
Yeah. Yeah. Where are its engines? Like that's.
Yeah. And like, I never realized that, because like the old one, you know, all they say is like set course for Alderaan, and then it cuts away and then it cuts back and they're there. But like this one, they actually like, you know, specifically mention it, that they travel through hyperspace with the Death Star. And it's like, oh, wow, that's really impressive to move like a ship the size of a moon through hyperspace. Is like pretty crazy to think about. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked how they did hyperspace. I don't know if it was different than before, but like, how it was, you know, you're fighting in a battle and suddenly there's an entire Death Star, or there's like the Rebels like legit like on top of you immediately. Like it just it's a cool little tactic, I guess. It just, that's what I was thought of. It's how quickly a battle can escalate through the use of hyperspace. What did you think of the final world that they were in, like the Spaceballs-esque world with the you know, the shielding around it and that final, like, you know, insane climax?
That was pretty cool. It was interesting. Like, that's risky when you do something like that, that shield, and they had the shield gate and everything, because, you know, we didn't see that in any of the other movies. So it immediately introduces that little bit of a hole in the logic. It's like, well, why weren't they using that on Endor to, like, protect that from, you know? So that was a little weird.
The first time, Chuck. Why use it a second?
True, but if they defended it better, I guess. But I don't know. I guess it was a cool idea. I think it was just like, if you're gonna criticize the Empire for using it, you have to look at their logic for, like, all right, well, why do you leave your, like, communications array so, like, out in the open where someone could just change the satellite and, like, shut it off? But it was a cool thing, though. Like, you know, you see the one ship, a couple of the ships got through, and then the last guy was trying to get through right when it closed off and he crashed and everything. So that was kind of cool. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I thought the overall world of it was pretty, like, look of the world was cool, because it was something different for a Star Wars movie. We never, like, saw, like, a kind of a beach planet war take place like that. Yeah. So
where did they film that, by the way? Because that was gorgeous. Well, before the fighting took place.
I don't know. My guess is usually, like, Hawaii is the automatic stand-in for most islands, so maybe...
I was thinking, yeah, South Pacific, something, maybe, I don't know. So,
but, yeah. Anything else before we give our just overall final thoughts?
I don't think so. I'll probably think of something later, but...
Yeah. Maybe, Greg, starting with you, so, you know, where would you, in the, looking at the vast array of Star Wars movies that's continuously growing every year now, where does this rank for you? Is this near the top of Star Wars films? Is it in the upper echelon? You know, where would you put this?
Top three are definitely the original. Then I would put this movie in fourth.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then I would put the last one, the Force Awakens, after this one, and then all the George Lucas prequel stuff after that. Way behind.
What about you, Chuck?
I disagree slightly on the back end there, but I think the original trilogy, definitely 1, 2, and 3. I agree with that. For fourth, I would say it's a toss up between this one and Revenge of the Sith. I actually really did like that movie. I thought that was the best original, or it was the best of the
prequel.
Prequel trilogy.
Yeah, I agree. That was my favorite as well, Chuck, of the prequel.
Yeah, and then I would put, like, maybe, I don't know. I Phantom Menace is definitely last, but I think Force Awakens might be second to last for me. I don't know. I wasn't into that movie at all. Yeah.
So you would put Clone Wars above Force Awakens?
I think I might.
Wow.
I've only seen it once, though, so I think if I rewatch it, I might change my mind. But
see, I actually, quick ranking for me, I actually would put the second episode 2.
Attack of the Clones?
Attack of the Clones. That's the last for me, honestly. For me, if, like, my ranking would go Empire Strikes Back, A New Hope, probably then, honestly, Force Awakens, and then episode 3. And then this, and then Phantom Menace, and then episode 2. So I really do like episode 3 a lot. I know it's got issues, but the first two stand above. I like Return of the Jedi. I would put Return of the Jedi. Actually, I forgot Return of the Jedi. I'd put Return of the Jedi after this, I think. I don't know. That's hard to say. To me, it's a good, but I liked Force Awakens a lot more. I liked, and I think I enjoy episode 3 a little bit more too. But again, I've only seen it once, so it might go up there on second viewing more so. But I still think it's a strong film. Like, I really think there's only two awful Star Wars movies, being episode 1 and 2, Empire Strikes Back and A New Hope were just far and above them all, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. I do have a soft spot for Return of the Jedi. I do like that. Just because that's the kind of the culmination of everything. And yeah. You kind of see Luke at his strongest, so it's like kind of cool that way.
Yeah, yeah. I do like it. Like I said, I think I like all of them a lot. It's tough. So I like that ranking could kind of change because it's hard comparing a movie like Return of the Jedi compared to something else. I think what Force Awakens has that like no other Star Wars movie does for me is that there's an element of mystery that I find really refreshing, because with this we kind of know what's going to happen for the most part. For the original trilogy, we knew what would happen because we would just pop in the next movie. Like when I would watch Star Wars, I would, you know, the story was complete by the time I was old enough to watch it. And then for the prequels, we obviously knew what was going to happen. But for the Force Awakens, it's like there's a mystery there that I'm excited about that I just couldn't be with anything else. So maybe after,
I can see that.
Maybe with the other episode 8 and 9, that mystery, if that mystery is either surpassed with those or what have you, maybe that would change. But for right now, I think what sells that movie for me is I just love all those characters, and it just has a good use of nostalgia without relying on it too heavily. But I don't know. It's a cool world that we live in where we're getting a Star Wars movie every year.
Yeah.
But all right.
So what do you this is my question to you guys.
Okay.
Now we know they're planning a Han Solo movie at this point. They already have him cast as well as Lando and stuff like that. But as far as other directions, other spinoffs, where do you think they should go next? What's something else that they should explore? A story that needs to be told?
Greg, you know a lot of the extended universe more than I do, so I don't know if there's one that comes to your mind.
Thrawn.
Yeah. Is that before or after? Where does that happen?
It's in the mists of the originals, I believe.
Okay. I would like to see the old Republic, a movie just taking place within that time frame. That would be kind of cool, because it's like how do you deal with that? Even though it's like thousands of years before, you know, A New Hope, but somehow the technology is just a little bit worse. but I would like to see, even if it's from the first that first Star Knights of the Old Republic game has a great Star Wars story. So even if they took that verbatim, I think that would make a great movie.
Yeah, I like the idea of the one rumor I heard they could possibly be exploring a Yoda movie.
Interesting.
I think that could be very interesting. Obviously, with how old he is, there's a lot to tell there.
You can make a Yoda series.
Something I right? Yeah, exactly. Something that I personally would want to see that I didn't really hear anybody else mention was the. I just think the story of Obi-Wan and a couple of the surviving Jedi after Order 66. Like, where did they go? What did they do exactly? Like, I want to see what Obi-Wan did between the time where, you know, he took Luke and he just kind of like went hid in his cave. Did he do anything else? Did he go anywhere else? You know, obviously he kind of knew Vader was still alive somehow. How did he know that? And, you know, a couple of the other surviving Jedi, like, where did they go? What did they do? Because there is some stuff in the expanded universe, but I'm not sure if it's considered canon or not. So I'd like to see him explore that a little bit, because I think Obi-Wan is my favorite character overall in Star Wars. So I'm always fascinated with him. So
they do touch on that with the current Star Wars series. Like they've had like the majority of that series takes place in between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. They have a few like standalone issues where they talk about where they have Obi-Wan stories, where it's like in between him and like when Luke was a little kid. So I forget what issue numbers they are, but and those are reportedly canon. So, but
nice.
All right. Well, we'd like to hear what you thought of our opinions on Star Wars. Rogue One, a Star Wars story. I'm never going to get that right eventually. But you can do so by commenting on the episode post, by going to geekcastradio.com, sending us an email at feedback@geekcastradio.com, or getting us on Facebook, just search Talking in Circles, GCRN. You guys are also on Twitter. What are your Twitter names?
I am at Heroic Age Chuck.
I am at The Create Board.
And I am at Movie Revolt. But that'll be it for this week. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel, same podcast feed. But for now,
this has been Chuck.
This has been Greg. Or Parkins.
And this has been Dan. And we've been talking in circles. We'll see you next time. Porkins, that's what we need.
Yes, Porkins.
Some sort of wacky teenage comedy about how he was able to become a pilot.
Kind of Dukes of Hazzard style, I think.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's like Porky's, but Porkins.
Yeah, it'd be like a little coming of age movie. You could have, like, Porkins, Biggs, Luke, and Wedge, maybe. You know? A little quartet.
Write it down, Disney, write it down.